I'll start with an introduction to Monte Carlo methods for radiation transport. Then I'll talk about particular way of doing time discretization in Monte Carlo methods, which is called implicit Monte Carlo, which has been suggested in the past for photon transport, which we extend to neutrino transport. Then I will talk about so-called discrete diffusion scheme, which makes, in some cases, implicit Monte Carlo scheme more efficient computationally. Then I will talk about extension of these schemes to the case when matter which emits radiation is also moving. After which I will talk about all implementation of these schemes in a 1D spherically symmetric code and show some tests. So in core collapse supernova, we have to do neutrino transport, which means we have to solve transport equation, which is given in this form, which basically describes how specific intensity of radiation, which is I, changes at each point due to emission of radiation, which is given by this term, and absorption of radiation, which is given by this term, where kappa is an absorption opacity. So, as we learned today, this equation has been solved in the context of core collapse supernova in 1D case, full transport, and 2D case, and several groups are attempting to solve it in 3D case. So the question which we want to answer in this work is whether it is feasible to solve this equation in 3D case using a method which is fundamentally different from previously used methods, and which is Monte Carlo method. Previously, people used deterministic methods in order to solve this equation. So Monte Carlo methods for radiation transport has several interesting features as compared to deterministic methods. So, one of the features is that Monte Carlo radiation transport codes are much simpler to implement if you know how to implement, whereas deterministic methods are not simple even if you know how to implement them. And it's very flexible. It's very easy to, for example, to include very complicated geometries in Monte Carlo code, to include different microphysical processes like, for example, inelastic scattering. It's very relatively easy. And it's very almost trivial to extend, once you have a 1D code, it's almost trivial to extend it to a multidimensional case. And it's easier to implement parallelization, and in some cases it has really good parallel scaling. But one big disadvantage of these methods is that these methods tend to be a lot more expensive than deterministic methods, especially in lower dimensional applications. But we know that as we increase the number of dimensions, Monte Carlo methods become more and more efficient. So it's not a priori clear that Monte Carlo methods will be more expensive than deterministic methods when we go to 3D. Actually, Pintor knows that Monte Carlo methods is more efficient than deterministic methods. This is what we want to see in this work. So on this slide, I'll explain the most key aspects of Monte Carlo radiation transport. So, as usual, we start with a computational domain, with our computational domain, and we divide our computational domain into many spatial cells, and in which we represent the matter with this cell average values, like, for example, temperature of the matter, density of the matter in each cell. Then we introduce the time step, as usual, after which we decide about Monte Carlo particle weight, which shows how many real physical radiation particles will be represented by one Monte Carlo particle. So after this step, we represented properties of matter in our computational domain, so we can calculate emissivity in each cell. So based on this functional form of the emissivity, we know what are the probabilities. We can calculate probabilities of radiation particle being born at a given point with a given energy in a given direction. So the next step is then just to sample, based on these probabilities, using random numbers, these particles, Monte Carlo particles, in our cell, computational cells. After which, once we have particles there, the next step is just to transport these particles. So during this transport, during propagation, some of these particles can get absorbed, some of them can remain in our domain in these cells, or some of them can leave our computational domain. Based on this information, on how much emitted, how much absorbed, at the end of time step, we update temperature of the material, And if we are talking about neutrino transfers, then we also have to update electron fraction of the material. So this was a key and generic aspects of Monte Carlo radiation transfer. Now I will talk about some details. So when we are thinking of developing a scheme for neutrino transfer, first, of course, we looked at what people did in photon transfer community, where people have a lot of experience with Monte Carlo methods. So one of these schemes, which was very successful and very popular, was suggested by Fleck and Cummings in 1971, which is called implicit Monte Carlo scheme, which does particular way, which does time discretization of the problem in a particular way. Then there is a scheme which is called discrete diffusion scheme, which was suggested by Densmore et al. For gray photon transport, which makes this scheme more efficient in high optical depths. So this is also, in our opinion, is compared to those schemes which aim to make this scheme more efficient at high optical depths. Among those schemes, this is one of the most simplest and the most efficient. That's why we choose this scheme in addition to this scheme to extend to the case of neutrino transport. So first, let's talk why we need to do implicit time discretization in Monte Carlo neutrino transport. So as I explained two slides ago, at the beginning of time step, we calculate emissivity in each special cell, based on which we emit particles, we produce particles. Then we propagate these particles until the end of time step. The problem here is that when opacity is very high, almost all of these particles which we emitted initially can get absorbed before reaching end of time step. So there will be nothing happening at the next stage after all of these particles are emitted. So in other words, this has a problem in a sense that it doesn't include re-emission of particles. So some of them get absorbed, some particles should be emitted, and within a time step, this scheme doesn't include that. Implicit Monte Carlo scheme tries to overcome this difficulty using transformation of transfer regression in a particular way. So we start with a transfer regression again. So it's a simpler case where we have just emission and absorption. And this equation shows is basically energy balance equation. It shows how internal energy of matter changes due to emission of radiation minus absorption of radiation. Using this equation, Fleck and Cummings related this emissivity in terms of internal energy, and they come up with several approximations with this particular expression, where UR is the radiation energy density, which is related to this emissivity. And this is a very important result, because now emissivity or radiation energy density is expressed in terms of emissivity at radiation energy density at the beginning of time step and some term which depends on specific intensity at the same time. So what it leads to the following transfer equation. So using that expression for radiation energy density, when we plug in into substitute emissivity with that expression, we end up with this transport equation, which has interesting form. So this part looks the same as the original transport equation, which we started with, except this difference and this difference, where Bn now is expressed at the beginning of time step. And absorption opacity is a real absorption opacity multiplied by this factor, which is between 0 and 1. So absorption opacity becomes smaller here. And there is another term which describes scattering of radiation, with scattering opacity kappa ES, where kappa ES is 1 minus F, original kappa. So we started from a transport equation which does not have any scattering, but now we have a transport equation which looks like which describes radiation transport with effective microphysics in which absorption opacity is smaller, but there is also scattering opacity. What it means is, as I said before, in explicit scheme, within time step, remission of particles after absorption is not included. And here, that process is treated as a scattering, effective scattering of radiation. So now, this absorption of the radiation and the subsequent remission in the next time step is included in this equation as a, within a time step, as an effective scattering process. And because of that, stability of the system, of this equation increases, improves a lot. Actually, it becomes unconditionally stable. So we extend this scheme to neutrino transport, in which case there are some additional complications. First, we have to solve transport equation in core collapse supernova for at least three types of neutrinos at the same time. Then, emission and absorption of neutrinos changes not only internal energy of the matter, but also electron fraction of the matter. So when we reformulate transport equation in terms of effective opacities, we have to take that into account too. And we show that it is possible to do that so that we again have this factor and we again have effective scattering and effective absorption. So the conclusion is it is possible to have implicit Monte Carlo scheme also for neutrino transport. So there is one caveat with implicit Monte Carlo schemes. If absorption opacity becomes very high, which is kappa is absorption opacity, if absorption opacity becomes very high, 1 divided by kappa is a mean free path. And mean free path becomes much smaller than the size of the cell, or computational cell. And this factor, F, which is, by the way, called flag factor, becomes very small, in which case effective scattering opacity becomes almost effective, almost equal to effective real absorption opacity, whereas effective absorption opacity becomes zero. So all of us, all of our original absorption and remission becomes effective scatterings. We have, now we have a problem which is dominated by effective scattering. So we have, in what happens to a particle in this regime? We have a cell, inside the cell, particle undergoes Brownian motion with small mean free path. So a lot of computational resources are now spent on just modeling this motion of this radiation particle inside in this small region, which is, of course, computationally inefficient and very expensive. So there has been several suggestions which try to improve efficiency of implicit Monte Carlo scheme in this region. One of the most simplest and most efficient one is called discrete diffusion scheme, which was suggested for in the case of gray radiation transport by Benzmore et al. In 2007. What it does is the following. I point out that in Monte Carlo, as I described a few slides ago, in Monte Carlo method, we actually don't solve any equations. We just formulate equation and directly simulate physical process, which is described by this equation. It is also the case in this discrete diffusion scheme. And let me explain that now. So we introduce zeroth moment of radiation and derive equation from transport equation for the zeroth moment by just integrating over angle. So we end up with this equation. Now we do a thing which is different from what we did to previous in pure Monte Carlo method. That is, we discretize this equation in our computational domain, in spatial computational domain, which we didn't do before. So we discretize this equation in the spatial domain, and using Fick's law, which describes flux of neutrinos in terms of zeroth moment in a diffusive regime, we end up with this equation. What is important about this equation is that this equation has one particular Monte Carlo interpretation. Here, these terms can be interpreted as a probability of moving particle from one cell to another. So it's quite different from pure Monte Carlo, which I was talking before. Before, in Monte Carlo method, we transfer particles from one point to another. Here, we transfer particles from one cell to another, which makes it a lot more efficient in a diffusive regime. So we extend also this scheme to a multigroup case when we have different energy of neutrinos. And in that case, we have additional kind of leakage of particles from one domain to another. There we have leakage of particles from one energy group to another energy group. So now these schemes were originally developed was the case when matter which is emitting radiation is not moving. Now we extend these schemes to the case when matter is moving. So now we talked about pure Monte Carlo approach and the discrete diffusion Monte Carlo approach. And we switch between these two approaches depending depending on what kind of regime we are. In diffusive regime, we use discrete diffusion Monte Carlo. Now, when we extend these schemes to the case where matter is moving, we use two different approaches to these two different schemes because they are quite different schemes. For pure Monte Carlo approach, we use so-called mixed frame formalism in which opacities, emissivities are defined in commoving frame with the fluid, and we are also in we also produce particles in commoving frame, but then transform all this information about particles into lab frame, where we, together with the opacity, also in the, we transfer into lab frame, where we perform transport. Now, I'll talk about extension of two velocity dependent schemes of discrete diffusion scheme. So we use equation for zeroth moment in this approximation, where we keep terms of this order, where higher order terms are neglected. So we end up with this equation. And this includes three important velocity-dependent effects. One is change of zeroth moment of radiation due to advection of fluid. So it advects together with the fluid. Then it can increase due to when fluid compresses. And it can energy can change due to Doppler shift effect. And we implement these three different effects in an operator split way. So this is the original equation, which I just talked about. And we split this one into three different equations. First one is this one. Second and third. First one is the same as the discrete diffusion equation when matter is not moving. So it is solved exactly the same way as original discrete diffusion scheme. Then we have this equation for Doppler shift, which can be reformulated as an advection equation, which has a solution, which can, has an analytic solution, in which energy of the particle is given as a function of time in a simple form. So, and this is very easy to implement into this scheme, to connect into this scheme, by continuously changing the energy of neutrinos as we propagate according to the solution of this equation. This equation also has a very simple solution by just taking into account motion of the particles. Probably I don't have time to talk about that. Finally, we implement all these schemes in our 1D spherical symmetric code to see how they perform. And now I will talk about some tests which we performed. The first test is a standard test, which people do quite often. It's a test in which we have central source of radiation, and it is surrounded by static matter with, which can scatter radiation. And this problem has an analytical solution. And according to this analytical solution, luminosity should be constant as it should be the same, independent of the distance to the source. And this is exactly what we see in addition to statistical errors, which we have to see. So this simulation, this luminosity versus radius for three different simulations. One is run with 100 particles, in which we produce 100 particles at every time step. The second is 400 particles. The third one is 1,600 particles. And the important thing here is that first is luminosity is constant according to the solution, plus statistical errors decrease with increasing resolution according to the scaling, in which statistical errors in Monte Carlo method should decrease as a square root of the number of particles. So roughly when we increase the number of particles by a factor of 4, error is decreased by a factor of 2, as we can see in this plot. Now, next test which we perform is a homologous expanding shell test, which is quite a problem which is similar to the situation which we have when we model a supernova light curve. Okay, so this movie shows energy density of, in this expanding shell of radiation expanding shell versus radius. And this is performed with two different methods. One is discrete diffusion and Monte Carlo scheme. So the profile of the energy density should be constant as it evolves according to the solution. And this is exactly what we see. And another thing which we see is that both discrete diffusion and Monte Carlo schemes produce similar results. Moreover, in this case, energy density should decrease as a r to the 4 as it expands. So in this plot, I show energy density versus radius for discrete diffusion scheme and Monte Carlo scheme, and they are indeed, and together with theoretical r to the 4 curve, and they agree quite well, as you can see in this plot. Finally, in this plot, we model the leptonization of a proton-neutron star using our code. So we have a non-moving proton-neutron star, just forms proton-neutron star, like 200 milliseconds after bounce, and we evolve this proton-neutron star. See how temperature and the electron fraction evolves in this proton-neutron star. And this shows luminosity versus time for three different types of neutrinos.
How many particles?
In this one, I think during entire simulation, I was using something like million particle for electron type neutrinos and a bit less for other types of neutrinos. And I run I did these simulations on 8 cores of one node because this is parallelized with OpenMP parallelization only, and it took something like 2 days. So the important conclusion from this experiment is that implicit Monte Carlo method for, together with a discrete diffusion scheme, seems to work for this scenario when we have proton-neutron star and when we have proton-neutron star. So it doesn't crash. It crashes when we use explicit scheme, as it should according to implicit Monte Carlo for photon transport. And it doesn't crash. It evolves without crashing in case when we use implicit time discretization. So this is a summary of my talk. So the main conclusion is that it seems that implicit Monte Carlo together with a velocity-dependent discrete diffusion scheme seems to be a good approach for doing neutrino transport in core collapse supernovae. And this scheme is applicable both to neutrino transport and photon transport. So with this knowledge in our minds, we can start writing 3D code to see how it performs. And I will stop here. Thanks.
Questions? Is your scheme capable to treat neutrino degenerate conditions?
Neutrino degenerate conditions? What do you mean?
So can you include blocking factors if the
blocking factors. In this particular case, blocking factors is included by reformulating transport equations so that effectively these blocking terms disappear. It includes using that transport equation. But whether we can include blocking effect terms directly, I haven't thought about that. But if I were to guess, I would guess that yes, because usually, at least from my experience with adding new features into the code, it's relatively easy to add different features. So I would expect to be able to include that, but I'm not 100% sure.
So for 1D problem, and how many particles are required to get the convergence of the result? For the 1D supernova problem, how many particles?
To get a convergence?
Yes.
So usually results converge. I mean, as far as the statistical errors are concerned, statistical errors decrease as we increase the number of particles. So they always converge from what another question is whether that error is acceptable for, that is, I think, a bit harder to answer. So for this example, which I showed here, and I think it's easy to judge whether it's acceptable or not. So in this case, as you can see, luminosity of neutrinos is oscillating a lot because of statistical errors. If you think that this is acceptable, then particles, not, like million particles, should be okay to have this kind of statistics.
So the root n, 1 over root n or something like that?
Sorry?
1 over root n, n is the number of the particle, right? So that.
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Okay. So in the, I'm interested in the feasibility, if you can do it in 3D simulation.
Okay. With,
how, can you comment on that?
Short answer is I don't know. I cannot comment on that. Because I haven't seen, I mean, without implementing and doing real calculations, I think it's hard to tell how it will perform. So the task is just to implement and see.
One question along that line is, you said this was a million particles and you ran it on 8 cores?
Yes.
And how much memory did it use?
How much what?
Memory.
How much memory? Like a few gigabytes. For a million particles, for these simulations, mm-hmm. I was using a few gigabytes of memory. So
closer to 2 or closer to 10?
Closer to 5, probably.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I think in this particular simulation, memory was the main limitation. I mean, doing simulations is not a problem because it can take longer. But this simulation took like 2 days or 3 days. So I could, if I had more, if I could take more particles, I could be able to do longer, just longer. That's it.
Any other questions?
Excuse me. You said this is proto-neutron star cooling?
Yes.
Or 200 milliseconds after bounce?
I think so, yes. I have done this some time ago.
So what's this thing at the beginning, the positron?
This peak?
Yeah.
I think it's simply because of inconsistency with the original transport and the... So it was evolved up to a certain point with a Vulcan code. And now I'm starting to develop it with my code. And there, probably I'm using different opacity tables. And also, maybe equation of state is not consistent with the configuration of proton interferon. Maybe with my equation of state, it should be a bit more compact. I guess it's because of that inconsistency. This is what I'm guessing. If it were completely consistent, I would expect just continue. So I don't know.
Did you start out with zero populations when you did the cooling calculations?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's maybe that and time of flight. And this is a luminosity measured at some fiducial distance, 500 kilometers.
Yes,
or something.
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe it's that.
I mean, the rise, yes, but the initial exponential.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you probably just converged to some...
Yeah, it's a relaxation.
Yeah.
All right, let's thank Aaron Azar again.